Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Quincy on the Law. My name is Quincy, and we're here for another episode of Quincy on the Law. So last time we touched on the topic of the bona fide purchaser for value without notice, and I promised that on the subsequent forthcoming episode, I was going to touch on the case law surrounding the doctrine in itself. However, quick commentary, a lot has happened since we did the last podcast, the episode. Some amendment rules have been drafted and passed by the Chief Justice that seeks to gag advocates from speaking, commenting, or in any way discussing the presidential election petition once the court is seized of the matter. However, I am aware that an advocate, a senior counsel, has moved to court to challenge the issue. So I won't speak on it because it's a live matter in court. But so first, let's just move on to the topic of the day. But that was an interesting development. Okay. So the first case of the day is referenced as Henry Mwangi Gatai and another versus Margaret Wanjiku Godwin and two others, 2018 EKLR. Now, the facts are that in this case, the plaintiff entered into a sale agreement on 18th August 2011 with the defendant for the purchase of the parcel of land situated in Karen within Nairobi County. The defendant was to be paid 12 million. He was paid 2 million, which was followed by 5 million. However, prior to the completion date and without terminating the sale agreement, the defendant proceeded to enter into another sale agreement with the interested parties on 21st November 2011. And sold the land for 13 million shillings. A dispute therefore arose. The defendant opted to refund the plaintiff's money and averred that the defendants did not pay the balance of the purchase price. The plaintiffs moved to court and pled for specific performance based on breach of contract, whereas the interested parties defended themselves as being bona fide purchasers for value without notice. The holding of the court was as follows. A bona fide purchaser for value without notice is one who buys something for value without notice of another's claim to the property and without actual or constructive notice of any defects in or infirmities, claims or equities against the seller's title. This is one who has in good faith paid valuable consideration for property without notice of any prior adverse claims. The onus is on the person who wishes to rely on such defense to prove it, and the defense is against the claims of any prior equitable owner. According to Snell's Principles of Equity, it illustrates the issue as thus. An important qualification to the basic rule is the doctrine of the purchaser without notice, which demonstrates a fundamental distinction between legal estates and equitable estates. The doctrine: a legal right is enforceable against any person who takes the property, whether he has notice of it or not, except where the right is overreached or is void against him for want of registration. If A sells to C, land over which B has a legal right of way, C takes the land subject to B's right, although he was ignorant of that right. But it is different as regards equitable rights. Nothing can be clearer than that a purchaser for valuable consideration who obtains a legal estate at the time of his purchase, without notice of a prior equitable right, is entitled to priority in equity as well as at law. In such a case, equity follows the law, the purchaser's conscience not being in any way affected by the equitable right. Where there is equal equity, the law prevails. That's a maxim of equity. It was also stated therein that the doctrine of the purchaser without notice never enabled a purchaser to take free from legal rights as distinct from equitable interests. Judge Gasheru in that matter thereafter concluded that the interested parties were indeed bona fide purchasers for value and that the plaintiff's claim lay in damages. Now, the second case was the case of David Peterson Kiango and two others versus Kariuki Thuo, 2012 EKLR. The facts are simple. Mr. Stephen was deceased. He owned four parcels of land within Kajiado and Kitengela. He passed away sometime in 1999, while he was still the legal owner of the four parcels of land. Three of his heirs, who will thereafter call the Thos, jointly and successfully applied for letters of administration intested to the estate of Stephen, which were duly issued on 11th August 2001 and confirmed on 22nd May 2002. Sometime in 2007, a person by the name of Stephen Winston Jendu purportedly entered into a sale agreement for the sale with Stephen for the purchase of the three parcels of land. The green cards to the titles to the said parcels show that Jendu was registered as the owner and issued with a title deed on 21st October 2008. This is ostensibly pursuant to the sale agreement. It was Jendu who later sold the suit properties to David Peterson Kiango, Mkiri Victor Mishuru, and Kena Kena Investments Limited sometime around 16th October 2008. Sometime around 11th January 2008, the self-same Jendu was similarly able to enter into another sale agreement with Stephen for the fourth parcel of land and subsequently had a transfer effected and a title deed issued in his name. The green card to this last parcel of the land shows as much. The green cards show that the transfers were made between Jendu and Stephen and not by way of a transmission, as should have happened if the transfers were done by heirs of the estate of Stephen. Armed with the bona fide titles issued by the lands registry, Jendu entered into subsequent sale agreements for the sale of the properties with David Peterson Kiango and the two other plaintiffs. And Jendu subsequently vanished into thin air and could not be traced even after a due report was made to the police and criminal investigations department. A dispute arose between the heirs and would be the current owners of the land who bought it from Jendu. The matter went to court and it was decided by Justice Professor Joel Ngugi, who rendered himself as thus: they, the Thos, did nothing wrong. The Thos are merely victims of a fraudster. In fact, they are vicarious victims to the fraudster because they never saw nor dealt with him. It is the other parties, the bona fide purchasers who vally without notice to the cases, who are directly victimized. Yet, through the operation of the law, these other parties have an upper hand in retaining possession and ownership of the properties in question. For me, it is not enough that I say that the law made me do it. I believe that the results here are in keeping with the overall policy objectives of the Land Registration Act, whose stability, I also believe, maximizes the welfare of the polity. That does not make the result here any easier for the Thos. The only saving grace is that they have a course of action against the state for recovery of damages. He thereafter concluded that the plaintiffs were the bona fide purchasers for value without notice, and they retained title as against the administrators of the estate of Stephen. This goes to show you that the doctrine of the bona fide purchaser for value serves a higher calling according to the land registration principles. It is not just there for the bona fide purchaser. It's not just there to benefit or protect the bona fide purchaser. It serves a higher calling in the land registration principles. The stability of the registration, which must be maintained, but the victims still have a claim in damages. Now, let's move to the next case. This is the case of Lawrence P. Mukiri Mungai, and attorney of France, suing as the duly appointed attorney of Francis Muriuki Mwaura versus the attorney general and four others, 2017. In this case, the appellant is the holder of a lawful power of attorney. It was donated to him by one Mwaura who purchased the suit property from a company known as Varsity Villa way back in 1992, and he was issued with a title deed over the same. After some time, Mwaura emigrated to the United States and appointed the appellant to look after his affairs in Kenya. In the course of conducting a search on an adjacent plot, the appellant realized that both his plot number 11 and the appellant's plot number 13 had been transferred to some other people. The search showed that the suit property had been registered in the name of the second respondent, which prompted the appellant to inquire from Mwaura whether he had sold the suit property to anyone. The third respondent came by an advertisement in the Daily Nation sometime in 2005, putting the suit property for sale. He contacted the advertiser, whom they met, and was given a copy of the title deed. The third respondent applied for an official search, which confirmed that the second respondent was the registered owner of the suit land, and he subsequently purchased the suit property with his two daughters at a price of $850,000. Consent to purchase of the same was granted by the Thika Land Control Board, and documents were lodged for registration. The suit property was registered in the names of the third, fourth, and fifth respondents, and the title deed issued. Upon evaluating the evidence and record, the learned judge held that the third, fourth, and fifth respondents had title over the suit property, and their title was valid, notwithstanding the fact that the second respondent who sold and transferred the title to them had acquired it fraudulently, precipitating in their appeal. Now, the parties canvassed their appeal by way of written submissions, and the holding was as follows. The Court of Appeal allowed the appeal. In allowing the appeal, the court considered the following matters. It said that the third respondent, who was the only defense witness, did not enter into a sale agreement with the second respondent, who he did not know until they met some time after he read an advertisement in the local newspaper. That the third respondent interacted with the second respondent only about four times, but he never bothered to get the second respondent's identity card. Very suspicious. That his advocate, who witnessed the oral sale agreement, and that he did not make any effort to contact the second respondent after commencement of the suit. So there was an oral sale agreement, did not contact the person who sold him the ring after the commencement of the suit. That means he should have enjoined him the suit. The fourth point was that the third respondent did not produce any receipt to prove that he paid any stamp duty for the transfer. Remember, when you were analyzing this topic last time, you must be shown to have done everything according to plan, according to procedure. In fact, you should exercise an extra amount of caution. Ex abundanti cautela. Out of an abundance of caution, you should go out of your way to do what is extra in due diligence. Aya. The fourth point, that the third respondent did not have a copy of the transfer that was allegedly signed by the second respondent in respect of the suit property. This is very weird. Now, from the totality of the circumstances surrounding the acquisition of that title, the Honorable Court opined that the third respondent was deprived of the protection accorded to a bona fide purchaser for value without notice. This is a very good case, because here the High Court found a person to be a bona fide purchaser for value, and then the Court of Appeal, in analyzing the circumstances, overturned that. Now, the court held as follows. This is what they had to say. The conduct of the third respondent in deliberately failing to enter into a written sale agreement with the second respondent, failing to pay stamp duty for the transfer, if any, and failing to keep a copy of the transfer, if at all, raises more questions than answers and portrays him quite negligent in his business transactions. In the court's view, he cannot be described as a bona fide purchaser for value. The trial court should therefore have ordered rectification of the register. The Court of Appeal, in overturning the trial court's decision, rested its finding on the conduct of the third respondent, who flouted basic requirements of transactions in dispositions of land. That goes to show that you must really follow the appropriate procedure if you intend to rely on this doctrine. Now, there are a couple of more cases, but I won't go into them. I'll just mention them. I had done a case brief of Maskdia Limited versus Benjamin Kipkurui. The Court of Appeal in Mombasa mentioned issues about bona fide purchaser for value. There's Shimoni Resort versus Registrar of Titles and five others. This is 2016 EKLR. You can read the facts. They're online. And then the last case, which is the most interesting one, was the Patricia Mary Clark case versus Godfrey Ngatienjiroge and four others. This is ELC case number 503 of 2017. Decided at the Environment and Land Court of Thika, EKLR. Why I'm very interested in this case? I participated in the research and the drafting of the submissions in this case. I was basically involved with the bona fide purchaser, and the person who won the case was our client at the time at the farm in which I used to work in. Albeit I was in my small capacity as a pupil, but I was a very aggressive pupil. So that decision gives me some, I have some stripes on my belt from that decision. So, ladies and gentlemen, that was the topic for today. case law on the doctrine of the bona fide purchaser for value without notice. If you intend to rely on it, you must fulfill the criteria. That was an extensive topic. We've analyzed it deeply, analyzed the laws, looked at the cases. I guess if there's anything forthcoming, I'll just give you a slight commentary and updates. But ladies and gentlemen, that was all for today. This is Quincy, and this is Quincy on the Law. Please subscribe for more.